Hi everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you. And let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for being patient. We pushed back this episode a couple weeks. One, because of scheduling. It's the beginning of summer. Jen, my lovely co-host, is a nurse, and she's been a little busy, you know, as the world is the way it is. And also, the events over the past couple weeks made me kind of not able to focus on watching an episode of a television show to talk about it in a podcast. So kind of wanted to wait so that important voices could be heard and not push out this bit of fluff, kind of. But now
I was in a fetal position for a lot of it. I was watching the IT Crowd. I just needed some Moss in my life.
Yeah, I was doing some weird, horrible reality TV show watching to cope and just turn off my brain every night, you know, in between donating money and protesting and stuff. But we're back, and I do think that now more than ever, we need shows that's all about taking down rich people who deserve to be taken down.
Boom, boom.
Hoisted by their own petard. Not necessarily the case in this episode, but, you know, somebody who's trying to screw over hardworking people. So today we're going to be talking about The Office Job, which aired on December 4th, 2011. It was written by Jeremy Bernstein and Josh Scher, and it was directed by our Star Trek alum, Jonathan Frakes. This episode, the team is followed by a documentary film crew while infiltrating a greeting card company in an homage to The Office. Which, Jen, are you a huge Office fan?
Huge, huge. Do you not remember?
Yeah, I know. That was kind of a leading question. I knew that you were a fan of The Office.
Oh, okay, good. I was like, oh my God, do you not know? Though I had,
no, I know.
I was okay with Space Ford Loved Upload.
What?
Greg Daniels. His new shows that just came out this year.
Okay, so let's get into this.
Leverage.
Before we get into like the Office ness of it, like the fake documentary style, we see an employee of this card company called Good Cheer. His name's Hal, and he goes in to visit the like nice hippie HR lady named Felicia, and she breaks it to him that he's being let go from their company, and he like, you know, starts yelling and like wants to have it out with the CEO, but he's like dragged out of there. And so he goes to Nate's, and he's worried that the company's new CEO is purposefully driving the company into the ground. And he helped build this company with this guy's grandfather and father. And it turns out this town in Massachusetts where this card company is like a basically like a mill town or a factory town. Like most of the people in the town are employed by this company, you know, because they, all the people who make the cards and all the people who like print them and all of that stuff, all the manufacturing, it's a big job, job provider, there you go, in this community. So if they go out of business, this town's going to become a ghost town because everyone's going to have to leave to find work. And there's a big card conglomerates who's coming in to possibly buy this company, which will save it, actually, instead of them having to close. And Nate starts out and he's like, oh, so you want to be, you don't want to miss out on the buyout and making money. And this guy's like, no, I want to save my town and this company that I helped build that I'm proud of. And he's like, maybe I'm not talking to the right people. And he kind of like explains himself further. And then Nate's like, oh, no, you are in the right place. We will help you. And I think it's really interesting that the idea that an entire town's economy could be based on a greeting card company.
It seems like with everything being so much more electronic, I do think that in general, cards are becoming kind of ghosty, though I do love paper source.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the idea of like it all being printed and stuff in this one town and this one factory, I guess, I just imagine everything is outsourced to China these days. But hey, maybe they've got that Made in America stamp and they can sell them for a little more money. And
I pay a lot of money for cards. I like a good card.
You do like a good card. So Hardison upstairs kind of goes through, you know, the info on this guy whose name is Fred Bartley. And he says the company was already doing poorly even before Fred, who used to be like a football player and now is just like still into football a lot. But even before he took part and is, you know, possibly embezzling, it's not been doing well. So this is, he says like each division has been failing like clockwork. It's like one part will mess it up and then another part and another part.
Do you think divisions of like a paper company are like the processing of the paper, the making of like the card, the envelope, or like you're on birthdays? Sympathy.
This is the condolences card division. Yes. And this is the birthday. No. I think probably that's all one thing, but I don't think they make the paper because later they talk about buying paper.
I might be again confusing it with the office.
So while Hardison is explaining all of this, he like puts down a bottle of orange soda and we see Elliot like look over at it and then like just kind of take it and put it in front of him. And Hardison doesn't notice for a second. But Sophie recommends that they should do a job called the Wicked Stepsister job. But Nate like immediately like shoots it down and says, no, that's too involved. We need something simpler. And then Sophie has a little notebook and she like, we see her open it up and she like puts a little check mark and you can see on the pages, like one page says put downs and it's like broken down by days and then inattentive on the opposite page. And she's just like kind of marked when Nate has like put down her ideas or when he doesn't pay attention to her. And so we see that there's a little tension there. Since they've started their little relationship. And yeah, so they're kind of going over the evidence that somebody, Bartley, the CEO, is embezzling money from the company. There are supplies that are bought that are never actually delivered, or they're way less expensive than he says that he paid for them. And so they think he's pocketing the difference. Mm. So they've got to go, and this part seems, I don't know how well this would work. I mean, this is a fictional show, but their ideas, because Heartfelt, the company that's going to buy them, is all about like their squeaky clean image. They need to expose him before they do their buyout pitch on Friday to give them enough time to get everything ready and like smooth things over, I guess, before the buyout. But I was like, if, because their reasoning is if it comes to light that the CEO embezzled after they're bought, that Heartfelt will do.
They can't go, yeah, they can't go back on their deal or something.
Like they've already bought it. Like, what are they? I don't understand. Like, would they just shut down the whole company? I don't know. Like, that didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Or maybe they wouldn't, like, it would come out when they were still doing the paperwork, and then maybe they would pull out and not actually buy it. Okay, maybe that's it. That makes a lot of sense. I was just, like, at the time writing my notes, I'm like, am I dumb? I don't get it. Then Hardison like turns around and he sees that Elliot has stolen his orange soda, but he gets it back as he does his like high five for morale. And Elliot, so there's something, you know, we've got tension between tension between Hardison and Elliot. We don't really know what's going on, and neither does Parker. She's like, what? And Elliot's just like, shut up, don't ask questions. And she's like, okay. So they go into the company as efficiency experts or as efficiency consultants, and Nate like straight up insults the owner, Fred Bartley, to his face. Like, and Fred Bartley is like, what? He's very Kronk from Emperor's New Groove. Just like, very dumb. Very dumb.
Yes. This is a, you're talking Josh Randall.
Yep. Josh Randall.
Which I looked up his entire history and I was like, I know you from somewhere, all the way down to Pushing Daisies. I had not seen anything else he'd been in.
Oh, wow. I know him too. Like he's like one of those, oh, that guy.
Yeah, but he also kind of looks a little bit like that other guy, but he's Charles. He's even covered in wraps the whole time. I'm not sure like why, I mean, I guess he's in flashback scenes, but I was like, this face is sticking with me.
You know,
and he wrote, the only other fun fact I found about him is that he wrote the foreword to his mother's book, Bird Baths and Paper Cranes.
Oh, interesting.
That was the only fun fact listed.
Oh, he was on Drop Dead Diva.
I didn't watch that one though.
He was on an episode of Castle.
Well, like where he played, I was going for more than one episode, but I could not remember the episode he was on in Castle.
An episode of Franklin and Bash. An episode of Grey's Anatomy. Yeah, no, he's just one of those guys who's been in like one episode of every show that I've ever watched. Pushing Daisies, you're right. Private Practice. Men in Trees.
I don't think I've seen that.
You haven't seen Men in Trees? It's about a woman who moves to Alaska because there's more men there.
I love that.
Literally what you did 10 years later.
I don't need it to like let me down like.
Oh, he was on Scrubs.
Yeah. One episode though.
No, he was in.
Oh, crap.
At least four episodes of Scrubs. And he was on Ed.
Ed.
Yeah.
I used to like that show a lot.
I really liked that show. Tom Cavanaugh. I love those blue eyes. So this guy who only understands sports metaphors, like you ever. He's like, oh, we're gonna help you get ready and we're gonna streamline you and we're gonna do all these things and like update your infrastructure on your IT, blah blah blah. And he's like, what? Oh, like the scrimmage before the big game. Like, sure. So Sophie and Parker, their job is to distract everybody while Elliot and Hardison try to find evidence of him embezzling the company. And then he gives them a tour and he goes into the copy room to copy their paperwork. And Felicia's there and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, the copier is broken. And Nate introduces himself and she gets all flustered because she shared the calendar with Fred, but he forgot about it when he hired these people because the documentary film crew is filming today or this week. And then we get this like zoom in to our very special guest star, who I think is like a huge pull for this show. Like, this is a big star in my opinion. He's been in, you know, he was in American Gods. He was in The Big Lebowski. He's been in tons of things. Peter Stormare, the nihilist, playing, what's his name? Günther Hansig, the noted German documentary filmmaker, who is very obviously based on the filmmaker Werner Herzog. And he's like waxing lyrical about the metaphor of the water cooler for the American capitalism. Yeah, and he's there to make a documentary about American small businesses and how they're the oil that lubricates the capitalist engine and blah, blah, blah. And Nate's like, oh, great. They realize this crew, like, they have big cameras walking around, but they're also putting up cameras all over the office to catch kind of everything that's going on. So it's going to be a little hard to, you know, pull their con while they're being watched all the time. And, you know, Sophie even says, we've got to push it back. We can't do this right now while all these things are here. And Nate discounts her, which she marks down. But to be fair, they only have like 3 days before Heartfelt comes. So they really can't push this back at all. So the only thing they can do is join this documentary and like agree to be filmed. Which
at this point, can we say that Nate's outfit is definitely an homage to Dwight
with his yellow
button down and his tan and just like brownish tie. I was like, oh God. And then his little bit of crazy hair.
Yes, I noticed that he had that like yellow, but part of me was like, yes, this is how he should look here, but I didn't. Yeah, obviously it is an homage to Dwight.
Duh. Like, who else wears a yellow button-down shirt? Like that kind of yellow.
I had to wear one in private school, my first Catholic school that I went to. The uniform was so ugly. It was like, the shirts were like a pea yellow.
Yeah.
And then it was this like hunter green, like tartan plaid with like one like little yellow line going through it. It was real bad.
It's not like when you start describing like canary yellow, when you start going to like an excretion in description of color, it's not good.
And like yellow is one of my favorite colors. Like, you know, I love a marigold, like a, not a marigold, but like a goldenrod, you know, yeah. I love a yellow, but that like pea yellow is not good. Not good on anybody.
Yeah.
So a couple times in this episode, they say like, and it took me like to this was probably like my fifth viewing of this episode, to like realize that it does take place over several days. Cause at one point they're like, we only have 3 days until Heartfelt gets here. And then they're like, they're going to be here in 3 hours. And I was like, what are you talking about? They're wearing different outfits. Like, it's obviously been different days, but they're wearing outfits. Like, each of them is wearing the same color scheme.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't look like wildly different. Like, Nate's still wearing a yellow shirt, like just slightly different yellow shirt and tie. But Miss Crystal or Sophie's character is still wearing light blue, and Parker's character.
She gets rid of that owl necklace though. It's a giant owl.
He's wearing it in the first day that they're there. She's got the big owl. And her hair gets a little like wilder too. And it's not as like coiffed, like it's not as nicely done.
I understand it. Working day shift is rough. Yeah, wake up early.
Right? No, and they're supposed to look like real people and not like fancy people. And then the guys, you know, just wearing button downs with ties. Though Elliot is wearing cargo pants with big old pockets on the later day. So Sophie's leading everybody through these like weird trust exercises where they're like putting fingers in each other's ears.
Do and, not like, doing put things in your ears like that. No. Like don't put your finger in someone else's ear. Don't put it in your ear.
No.
Keep your hands to yourself. Did we not learn this?
Especially right now. Very much keep your hands to yourself.
There's not much you can get from someone's ear except for a disgusting finger.
Yeah. But don't get in your hands anywhere near anybody's face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was before all this, but still, like, these are weird trust exercises.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be ludicrous. Like, she makes them put on blindfolds and then, like, bounce, jump around like monkeys. And then she's like, oh, is it monkeys who jump or is that bunnies? And this one poor girl, like, she's like, all right, everybody do a trust fall. Who's the head writer? And the head writer, like, moves away and the poor girl, like, falls.
Oh.
Down. It's so bad. And Parker is meeting with the creative teams and she's, like, writing her own really horrible.
They are amazing. She doesn't want happy cards, no.
Yeah, she wants, like, a dinosaur eating a lion for a graduation card. That's what she thinks is good. And
because two dinosaurs artist. Kissing, not accurate. Eating a lion. Definitely happen.
Yeah, those are animals that were definitely alive at the same time.
Well, you know how they say, like, the classic Tyrannosaurus versus, like, Stegosaurus? As much time had passed between there as, like our time and the T-Rex?
And their time. Yeah, yeah.
Like in a next film. Or in this next Jurassic World, where the ending with the lion and the T-Rex.
There was a lion and a T-Rex, and I don't watch Jurassic movies anymore.
Oh, Chris Pratt's in it, my husband. I have to support him. You know, that's what you take on with marriage. Yeah.
Join his church, it's fine. Yeah, so I'll have to watch that then.
Yeah. But her name is Mindy in it, as an as a reference to feeling.
Kidding. I love it. And Sophie also, while she blindfolds everybody, she, like, leads them around the office, like, jumping and dancing. And at this point, Gunther has already kind of noticed Parker and her Parkerness and is starting to fixate on her. But I love this scene. Like, maybe it's in the deleted scenes. I can't remember now because I watched them both, but it's either in this episode or the deleted scene when, like, Parker's standing by a desk and then the camera watches everybody, like, prance by her with the blindfolds, and then she, like, they look back to where she was and she's disappeared. She's like Batman out of there when you weren't looking. And Gunther's like, where did she go? But while they're doing that, the boys are snooping in Hartley's office but the camera crew follows them, so they're, like, looking for embarrassing evidence and what was the other one? Fragile activity. And Elliot's like, what am I looking for? He's like, you know, fragile int stuff. But all he finds is a pack of cigarettes. They don't find anything suspicious, except Hardison finds a candy bar in the, like, mini fridge in there, and he starts to eat it, and Elliot gets all mad at him. He's like, is that yours? Did you put that in there? Don't eat somebody's food. And so they're like, what is going on?
I don't know how I feel about people to put candy bars in the fridge. It gets too hard.
I know. He was like, I like it when it's cold. I was like, no, I don't like cold chocolate. It's
my
hard.
Dad loves a frozen Snickers, not the kind with ice cream in it, just like a regular Snickers that he freezes.
I'm okay with that because the chocolate in the Snickers is like a thin thing of chocolate. And so it's like the caramel that's the chewy. Like that was like a Hershey's bar. And like that's that I cannot condone. Cannot condone. But so we find out in like the little confessional booth with the camera pointed straight at Elliot that somebody ate his sandwich from the fridge that he made for later, and he's upset about it, and he's obviously blaming Hardison, and you know, so that's where their tension is coming from.
I love it. It's a turkey sandwich, and he's like, I'm allergic to tryptophan. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, he's like, I wouldn't be me. Why would I eat that?
Yeah,
I love later when Elliot describes the sandwich. I'm like, this sounds like the most delicious sandwich.
I want to eat that sandwich. I'm salivating as soon as
it's heard. And like,
he makes it his own. Yeah, makes everything bagel?
On everything bagel with like his own, what is it? Green onion and something cream cheese spread.
No. It's Maui sweet onion.
That he sautés.
Yes, with the turkey and then
the Havarti dough.
Oh yeah, and then God, he does the. You're right. The spread he makes sounded delicious.
On everything bagel. Though how the man must have so much self control to make that and then put it in a fridge for later.
Maybe he made two.
Man, because I would eat two. Just sit
this
down
is how I do burritos. When I'm making burritos for later to freeze, I have to make my snacking burrito.
Because otherwise you just like, you put it in the freezer and you're like, can't stop thinking about that burrito. So
yeah,
good.
It's just calling my name.
Yeah. So, okay. So like Hardison, they like all meet back up in the coffee room and Hardison is like, I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find any evidence of him doing any of this. And actually all the things that he ordered did get delivered, and Nate is looking at all of like the list of the things that he's bought, and it's like color shifting ink, cotton paper, and he realizes that he is printing counterfeit money, like,
yeah,
all of these things, and specifically he's counterfeiting the euro because it's a little easier to fake. And so now Parker, who, you know, has a nose like a bloodhound for money, is sent out to find the paper.
Which does not understand for a while what they're talking about.
No, it is so great when they're, he's printing fake cards.
Yes.
They don't have real emotion. She's like, oh, counterfeit cards.
Yeah, aw.
So good. Meanwhile, Sophie has talked to Felicia from HR about how Nate has been treating her. And so we find out that she's like, this is a thing called reverse favoritism where he's going to like undermine you and like try not to make it look like he's putting you before everybody. And she's like, so I sent her to talk to him. And Felicia like goes in and talks to Nate while he's pouring coffee. And then he like pours coffee everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's great. It's a really good like comedic beat. There's a lot of, not slapstick, but there's a lot more almost like physical comedy in this.
Well, it's like similar to The Office. They wanted to be like, it's being filmed through blinds type thing, mm-hmm, where they're being converted.
There's a lot of like breaking the fourth wall and like addressing the camera.
And like it's a shakier filming scene because it's, mm-hmm, just more handheld. It's great.
Yeah, Parker keeps like trying to beat people up who are trying to film her. She hates cameras. Hardison and Elliot go to the warehouse because they're looking for the printer. They've got to figure out where they're printing this money. And they're still arguing about the sandwich. But they encounter like the warehouse workers who were there. And Elliot thinks that they're probably Bartley's muscle. And Hardison's like, are you kidding me? Like that guy just doing some fat shaming, doesn't think this larger man can beat anybody up. And he's like, you know, maybe you ate your own sandwich and you forgot about it. And that's when we get the full like rundown of the most delicious sandwich ever. Because Elliot is so angry. He's like, my sandwich is not forgettable. Like, how dare you? And then Gunter is like watching footage of Parker smelling
paper.
Smelling paper, because we know that Parker loves the smell of money, so she can like, oh yep, that smells like a euro.
I was thinking like, about it when you were watching, I was like, do you think Christina's like the smell of a new book, but with Parker it's the smell of money.
Yeah it's definitely like that. And he's like, she has the nuclear winter in her.
So
she has the soul of a German. He's so weird. And Sophie goes to try to break Bartley to like try to get him to, you know, basically confess. And Nate, the scene is really fast, but I really like it. Nate is talking to Hardison and Elliot. He's like, okay, so I've got all our terminology down, like, you know, heart, like, you know, faking emotion and all this stuff. But he's like, but I don't know what the sandwich means. What is the sandwich code word for? And they're like, It's a real sandwich, man. It's a sandwich.
Yeah.
It's a sandwich.
Yeah.
And I just love, they're like, duh, it's real. It's so good. And Parker comes in and she asks the question that is very important. She's like, why are we always meeting in here? The copier is broken. It doesn't even work. And they're like, oh, this is the printer that we've been searching for. It's right here. And they open it up and there's like glowing.
Yeah, you.
And stuff.
Do you think it's overheating in there? There's got to be something in the back to help that out.
No. It is fancy. I've never seen a copy machine glow like that. Wild. And Sophie comes back in as they've kind of opened this up and they're looking at it. And she's like, guys, it's not Bartley. I did everything. Like, I used, you know, words that would trigger something. I use the neuro-linguistic programming on him. Like, nothing. He's on the up and up. So he has no idea what's going on. And they're like, well, okay, we've got an airtight case that somebody is embezzling this company, but we don't know who. And now Hartfield's coming this afternoon, so we've got to figure it out. So they need to get security footage to see everybody who's come in to the coffee machine. But the actual security cameras, their hard drives are erased every 12 hours, and they're not very good anyways. So
very good security at this card company.
It's really bad. But I mean, it's a card company.
No, but it's good security for a card company. Like, oh, the hard drives are erased every 12 hours. They worried you're going to get someone else going to come in and steal the with love card idea.
I guess so. Yeah. So they're like, all right, well, we do know somebody who's recording 24/7 here. So they have to bring in the film crew on it. And Gunther is very excited about this.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, you're like the A-team. Okay. And so they've got to like watch all of the footage that they have of this copy room. And Nate makes Sophie do it. And she realizes like, oh, this is retribution. He's like, this is reverse favoritism. I'm like, she's never going to sleep with you again.
Especially because he's not good at foreplay.
Yeah, that's right. He doesn't like it.
No.
But Sophie's like, oh, it's on. And then they like go back and forth. And I like how they did this. Like, you don't hear them say the stuff. You just see them react to it, which I think is really fun. And they know all of their little pressure points.
Oh, yeah.
They've known each other for a long time because they are intimate. You know, so like, do you have any interest outside of your job? Like, you're a functioning alcoholic. You're
functioning. That's the word she forgets.
Yeah. What a horrible thing to like say about yourself. Like, oh, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm a functioning alcoholic.
Yeah. Like I can get stuff done.
It's so bad. And like, you know, her acting career tanked and ageism, like implying that she's old.
Ageism. I know.
Her face.
Ooh.
So angry. Which is, yeah. And I think that like really kind of is a great way to show like they know each other really well. Like they know what's going to hurt the other person, which is something you do when you know someone for a long time and you're angry at them. You can pick them apart because you know all their little vulnerable places. But to do it on camera, whew.
And I like the writing, how they did it. Like, it was back and forth, got funnier and funnier. Smaller things were said back and forth, so it was less information. Mm-hmm. And then it was just like the end was F this with a card.
Exactly.
It was like a perfect ending. It was like it's like one of those comedy things, and you hit it and...
And then move on. Yeah. So they finally see the warehouse guys in the copy room replacing the toner for the printer. And so they need to... They're like, okay, these guys are in on it. We need to find, which is what Elliot thought, that they were the muscle. So they have to go get information from them. And Gunther wants it on camera. And so we see Hardison adding a little button camera onto Elliot's tie, which is so cute because Elliot's just like calmly standing there as Hardison like fiddles with it. Like he could have taken the tie off. Like.
And yeah, that would be hard and easier. I don't know. Really, it might be hard to do that Windsor knot again.
That's true. And he said it's really sensitive.
But then I love, like, it lifts up, they lift up the tie, and you see from the camera's point of view, looking down at it, and he, like, blows it a kiss, because, like, Gunter's asking about it, and he just goes, he, like, blows it a little kiss, like, what? It's so funny. Like, that felt very much like a Christian Kane moment, and not so much an Elliot moment.
Yeah.
Which I love. And, so, Gunther's like, oh, do you have another one? And he is such a creep. He puts it on his belt buckle. And
why
he like goes
his belt buckle?
Why his belt buckle? Like, so creepy. And he's, like, angling his crotch at Parker and, like, at, talking to her. And I really didn't like that.
No, I didn't like the way they were doing this. I was like, why? Why is it so, why is it so now, like, he is gone creepy? He's, like, focusing in her thighs and her, and he's getting close.
He, like, followed her into the bathroom.
Yeah, and now it's more, like an aggressive thing. I'm like, she said she doesn't like cameras, so you've come at her with your crotch cam, which, my God.
But, I mean, she sees it pretty quickly, and then she takes it off him, which comes in handy later.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's, I don't think they needed that, like,
well, he could have had it anywhere. He could have added on his glasses.
He could have had it, like, on a button on his shirt. Like, it could have been anywhere. He could have been, like, had it on his watch and just been, like, had his hand up by his
face. Yes, and this would have been funnier. This would have been more like him.
Yeah, it would have been, like, way less creepy. So, I didn't like that. Didn't like that at all. So, I do like Elliot chasing and beating up the warehouse guys. There's like a combination of like from his tie camera with like the shaking and then the security camera footage, which is just like really like fun editing there. And he like jumps off a big barrel of something. This warehouse they actually used in I think it's season 2 episode where they Parker was like breaking into a safe in this warehouse, and I can't remember what it was now. Might have been Beantown Bailout, but I don't hold me to it. It definitely probably wasn't. And just like one of those examples of them using a Portland location more than once. So the guy, once Elliot tackles him, has no idea. He's like, the other guy, Bob, put him up to it and just said that Bartley wanted it done. But we know it's not Bartlett. Bartley who wanted this actually. So
I know I think I wrote down Bartlett a lot. And I was like, what's the president doing in this?
No, I wrote it a couple times. I was like, no, Bartley. So which, you know, it this guy saying Bartley wanted me to do it, like, so this is not just a counterfeiting thing, this is also a frame up. They want whoever's doing this wants to frame Bartley for this. And the printer is set to remote print, Hardison says. And he has traced the print cue back to Felicia from HR.
Yes.
So he also says that in the cue, there's not just money set to be printed. There's also a suicide note from Bartley that is set to be printed during the meeting with Hartfeld. So it's a counterfeiting, it's a frame up, and it's about to be a murder.
Trifecta.
Yes, the triple threat. And I love this scene of chaos. The Hartfeld people show up and everybody in the office is melting down.
Yeah.
They're not ready for this meeting. Bartley is missing. They don't know where he is and he's supposed to lead the meeting. So Sophie and Nate are gonna stall while the boys go find Bartley. And Gunter, they like tell Gunter to go with the boys, and he's like, well, what about her? What's Parker gonna do? And they're like, I love the guys are like, come on, you're coming with us. And then at the same time, in unison, they say, bring your ass. It's just so, I had to rewind it a couple of times. This is really good, but it was so in unison. And then he leaves, and Parker has like lifted his wallet, which is great.
Yeah.
So the boys are like searching for Bartley. His car is still in the parking lot and they can't figure out where he's gone. And the camera person, I guess, can't talk isn't allowed to talk while they're holding the camera because they
just
kept like.
He knows the rules. He knows the rules, Christina. And he also cannot drop that camera to help save that man's life.
Exactly. I know. We're supposed to be an impartial observer. But they're like pointing to this pack of cigarettes and they're like, okay, it's cigarettes. But Gunter realizes that.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert. I told the.
But it's okay. These people have probably seen this before. But Gunter says, oh, Bartley told me earlier that he quit smoking. And you see like a little clip of him saying, I quit smoking. It was really easy.
Yeah. 2 months ago. Easy. Discipline.
Just, yeah. But then they show some footage of him coming from like a door that says roof access. So he's obviously like gone up to the roof to have a cigarette to like chill out. And they get up there just in time to see some of the warehouse guys trying to beat him up. And I guess try to throw him off the roof. So of course a fight ensues. Elliot's beating everybody up. Hardison is also trying to beat somebody up. But one of the guys like literally picks up this gigantic man and throws him off. Like they don't trip him off. Like he flies through the air.
Yeah, I was like, oh crap.
Yeah, threw him off the side of this building. And then Elliot has to beat up everybody else before he can go save Hardison. And then, Leo, why'd you do that? He's like, no one throws Hardison off a bridge, no one throws Hardison off a roof except for me. And he's like, no, I'm just kidding. And he's like, huh? No. Which, you've seen the meme of the video of the lady who tries kombucha for the first time, right?
No.
Okay, so she like takes a sip and she's like, oh, and then she goes, and then she goes, oh, again. So that's like a meme with her making that face. And I think Elliot's face is like the original of that. Where he's like, yeah.
No. That major, what came first, Elliot's face or kombucha?
Elliot's face. Before kombucha lady. I think people have been having that that reaction to kombucha for a long time, but this woman like documented it. So then we get to see everybody in the company making their pitch to Heartfelt, and it's really awkward, and it's done kind of early. So of course they send up Parker to help because yes. Sophie's really been working with her on this, the long con, which we know is not Parker's forte. And neither is public speaking. So sending her up there is a choice. And my card line is Eskimo kisses. And like she does like weird sign language and
like ASL with it all. It's adorable.
And then like her slides are like really creepy. There's like vultures eating a carcass and like
happy birthday card.
A morgue.
Thank you. I was like, I would buy these cards.
I know. I was like, I kind of would too. They're hilarious.
They're pretty good. They're pretty good. I haven't seen them at Hallmark.
No, Heartfelt does not agree. They are not into this. But luckily, Bartley shows up just in time and starts to try to give his pitch awkwardly. And Felicia sends a text from her phone, which sends something to the printer. And the receptionist, who's like the only person out in the office, hears it and goes to the printer and finds this sheet of euros printed and is not the brightest person.
No.
Because you can't just print your own money. Like if you print your own money, that doesn't mean you're rich. Like it does, but it's, you will go to jail.
Do you think it's a double-sided printer? I mean, like, is a printing double-sided?
Yeah, you can print double-sided. But she's like, the printer just started printing money. We're all going to be rich. She's like, no, baby, no. And Felicia immediately is like, it was Bartley. And this is, like, the worst acting. And I know, like, I think it's supposed to be. Like, I don't think this is the actress's fault. Like, this is the character is being a bad actor. This is Bartley. He's been counterfeiting and he's trying to run this company into the ground. And poor Bartley is like, he's just too dumb. He's like, what?
He's really like, is.
He's the one who wouldn't fix the copier. And he's like, we couldn't afford to fix the copier. And everyone's like,
what is the copier?
And you ordered the weird ink. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she's like, and he made me fire Hal. And he's like, you said he grabbed you. So he was like, we gotta fire this man because he harassed somebody. So Fred is a good guy. He's just dumb. Nate steps up and he's like, no, because Hartfield's like, well, if this is true, then we're withdrawing our offer. And Nate steps in and he's like, nope, Felicia did it. And she's like, well, you're the efficiency expert he brought in. I bet you're with the mob.
You look like you could be there, yeah.
You could be with the mob. And he's like, well, actually, we have it on tape. And he pulls it up on the screen. And we see that Parker, in a flashback, like, Parker put the camera, button camera onto her card again. And
we also see she's printing off 500 pages of this. And it's like, that's going to take a long time to print.
Yeah. Well, maybe she was like, maybe it'll take this receptionist a while to go over there.
To like notice a lot of things are printing. But then like with the suicide note, like they'd be having to wait a while before that suicide note came up. I think they'd get time.
It's true. Like, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I can imagine like the whole building would have been shut down as a crime scene and then the police eventually would have found it, right?
So I think someone would have plugged that. Like, save those trees. Do we have to go through all this ink?
No, they wouldn't have. They wouldn't have. But I just love that Bartley's just too dumb to have done this. And he's not a bad guy. She's just wanted to take this company down for a long time. Like, even before he was there, she was, like, sick of everybody, I guess, like, taking her for granted and just thinking
she... I really wanted to try those brownies, though. They kept mentioning her brownies.
I know.
This show made me very hungry.
Also, like, at what point is it people's fault for taking it for granted and you for not being like, no, this is, I am smart. Like, maybe I shouldn't be in HR at this company. Like, maybe I should go do something else. Because their whole thing is like, I'm smarter than you.
Other people had a cubicle.
Exactly. She had her own office. It was a big office, too. So, but yeah, she makes a run for it, and Elliot trips her with the water cooler, which, like, brings
it was out.
Yeah, it was almost done. And then, like, Elliot and Hardison, like, high five. They're like, yeah, I tripped that middle-aged woman. Woo!
Knocked that lady down.
I'm so tough. And she's like, you know, yelling at them all, like, ah, you're all fools. Because they're like, why did you betray us, Felicia? And so they lock her in an office until the police get there, which I think is great. And Bartley doesn't understand what's going on. He's like still so confused until Nate has to put it into sports terminology.
I know. I was like, this is getting a little much, guys.
Don't be explaining.
Where are we going with, like, the stereotypes?
Yeah. Yeah. But then Sophie, like, writes down that Nate, like, undermined her again. I'm like, Sophie, I don't think he wanted to undermine you so much as he wanted this man to understand, and he was really stupid.
Like, this wasn't a shot against you. It was a shot against that man who now runs this company, and he probably...
Exactly. But luckily, the guy from Hartfield is like, oh, I, too, love football. Like, this is sports. A rare thing. This is a rare thing. Another person...
Do you also like beer?
Have you seen Star Wars?
Like, I would like them to be, like, the most stereotypical men things.
Yeah. They just start grunting at each other. Like,
yeah, and then it's just a series of grunting and scratches. Like, yeah. Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Yeah, I just said Home Improvement. Yeah, exactly. But Nate's like, oh, yeah, but if you like sports, then you're going to love his new card line. And then we see it switches to Bartley showing off his card, which is, like, football related and is about, like, emotion and men or whatever. And it shows also that he rehired Hal, and that's, like, the end of Gunster's documentary, which he's doing, like, a private screening for all of them in the back room at the bar. And he's like, what did you think? And they're like, oh, it's great, like, it's so uplifting and hopeful and, like, it's wonderful. And he gets really upset because he wants it to be depressing. And in the commentary, they said like, rewatch that scene because none of the actors are looking in the same direction. Like, none of them are looking at Gunther because Peter Stormare was, like, so outrageous that they couldn't look at him without breaking character. And so, like, when he goes storming off, like, if you look at Elliot, like, Christian Kane is, like, keep, like, screwing his mouth together so he doesn't bust out laughing. And he is, like, it is a funny scene, so he's like, I like that guy. But, like, they're all just trying not to make eye contact with him so they don't bust out laughing. It's great, because he's like, no, this is not what it's supposed to be. And he, like,
you have the soul of a German. I love it.
Yes, he asks Parker, he's like, you have a soul of a German. What do you think? And she's like, I don't get it. And he's like, no. And he, like, breaks the disc. And he apparently, like, even, like, cuts himself. Like, she's like, he cut himself. Nate's like, you did delete all of that, right, Hardison? And he's like, oh, yeah, he has, there's a virus in it, all of the files, except for that one.
Yeah.
We're erased. Elliot, he's like, I kind of feel sorry for him. And so Hardison's like, okay, so do you believe that I didn't steal your sandwich now? And he's like, because I was going to offer to buy you dinner to apologize. And they're like, everyone's like, oh, you're going to buy dinner? So they start heading out. And Scobie's like, hey, you know, I'm really sorry for all of the mean things I said about you in the video. Like, I was, you know, just, she's trying to apologize, but he gives her a card and she reads it and we have no idea what it says, but they're like,
oh, it's a dick pic. That's all I could think of. I was like, well, probably.
Instead of fuck this, it's like, fuck me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, like,
she's like, okay.
That's going to be the new line of cards.
Oh God, please no. But then they both, like, there's like a beat where they, like, look up, like they're paranoid now that they're still being watched by cameras, which they are. And then this very last scene was supposed to be like a stinger at the end, like in a Marvel movie or whatever at the end of the credits. But the studio or the network wouldn't let them do it. So it had to be right after this. And it's Hardison eating a sandwich saying, oh yeah, I ate the damn sandwich.
Yeah. And even that sandwich, I was like, that sandwich was good. What did he make there?
Yeah, I know.
That cooking was with Elliot. I would watch that.
I know. Yes.
Gourmet sandwiches.
And his YouTube channel, I would watch. Okay. Any more thoughts on this episode?
Do you think it would have been what year did this come out?
2011.
That actually doesn't matter because I don't know when the other thing happened. Do you think when Hardison locks her into the closet, he should have done like a bye Felicia shout out? And do you think Felicia's have a new like self-confidence thing as opposed to Karen's?
So definitely the bye Felicia thing. Ice Cube said that in a movie, definitely before this. I do think it's something Hardison probably would say in character. I don't think it's something two white writers would have written for him. But I could see like Aldous Hodge ad-libbing it, but he didn't.
Yeah.
So I think it would have been, that could have been done.
I didn't get the reference as much until I moved here and one of my coworkers make a bye Felicia cake anytime anyone leaves and he throws it on the table. And that's his way of showing love.
Wow.
It's just green, cute green cake says bye Felicia. Tastes wonderful.
Okay.
I was like, that's wow, very that's a burn. Sick burn.
He makes it himself?
Yeah.
Okay. I love that he has a signature cake.
Yeah.
Does he have more than one signature cake? Because I feel like if you have a bye Felicia signature cake, you should have like all sorts.
I think it's the only cake he makes.
Like a treat cake or a...
I mean, he makes a lot of very good food. This is just my coworker.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. But that was like my only real thing. I was like, they missed a moment.
They did. They could have been there. I do think
the millennial references. Like, I feel like they were going for the, like, those cards. Those are millennial cards. And if Heartfelt need to get on board with it, you gotta apply to the next generation because they need to start writing cards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey,
if you want to see her live, you gotta, yeah.
You want to keep trying to teach grandma how to use email, or you want to just write her a card?
But maybe, like, not a card with a dead body on it.
No, obviously it's going to be the vulture eating the zebra.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Just like a reminder.
Do you have a high slate?
I don't. I went down like a little bit of a rabbit hole researching. Hold on, I got my cards for you. Researching the guy was supposed to portray, because I was like, mm-hmm. Who is this famous guy?
Werner Herzog.
Thank you. I got it right here.
Werner Herzog, who most recently directed The Mandalorian.
He was also in it.
Yes.
As a star.
Yes, he starred.
He's the client.
He directed it. That's right. He was just acting in it.
And he was in an episode of Parks and Rec 1. I wrote down the things I knew him from.
What episode was he in?
Keg Jeggings.
I don't remember that episode. Or I don't know the title of it anyways.
Mm-hmm. This is one of those moments I should have done. I was doing research up until this Zoom call, so I would have done more. That's why the research is a little bit. I mainly just wrote some fun facts about him because I was just reading more and more about this man. And he is just like you read, like, that is one fact that could have been about one person, and it's mind blowing. You probably know all these facts, but for me, I was just like, pew, pew, pew.
I know nothing about Werner Herzog except for his name. And I apparently thought that he directed The Mandalorian, but he did not. So I don't know anything about him. So
he might have directed it as well. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know who directed Mandalorian. I just know he was the client.
I'll look it up. Okay, you tell me some other things, and I will look up The Mandalorian.
Okay. These are just fun facts. I'm just going to pop at you, okay?
Okay.
So, in reference to this episode, what I thought was interesting is his film often features ambitious protagonists with impossible dreams and people who have unique skills in obscure fields.
Mm.
So, he's actually does these very, like, interesting films. That's not that fun. I understand that. I've let you down there. Let me go fun. He had one of his claims that he talks about is that he walked on foot from Munich to Paris, which is he literally walked 500 miles. I know it's 5,000 miles, but still impressive. In 1974 to prevent his very sick friend, Lottie Elsner, from dying. Because he said that she would not, she wouldn't die without him getting to her deathbed. You know, that's rude. Yeah. And then she lived 8 more years.
So he just, like, didn't go to see her for 8
years?
No,
he was on his way to see her, but he walked there. Wow. I don't think it took him 8 years to get there, but I feel like that's a long way.
I mean, I would take 8 years to walk 500 miles.
I probably would have given up. I would have been on the road. They'd be like, well, she died.
Like, I just live wherever I ended up. Good night.
He offered to eat his own shoe if this young American film student actually went out and made the movie they were talking about. And the student did. It was a Pet Sematary documentary called Gates of Heaven. And he made good on his promise and he filmed it. And you can look it up. It's Werner Herzog. Eat your shoe.
All right.
He used to work for NASA.
what?
Yeah. He refused his honorary doctorate from Cambridge because he doesn't believe that he's the type of man to achieve that level of respectability. Hi. Like these, it's going to get crazier. He's almost died a couple of times.
Okay.
When he was a few days old. He was nearly killed by Allied bombs during World War II because there was a skylight in his nursery that shattered and there was glass all over his crib, but none of it hit him.
Oh my God.
And then another night, he was scheduled to fly on the same flight as the ill-fated German teenager. This name?
Julian, hold it up a little further. Hold it up. Kopeck.
Yep.
Kupke.
Exactly. But he was bumped the very last minute. He was the only person to get bumped, and the plane crashed in the Amazon on Christmas Eve, and Julian was the only survivor enduring 11 days alone.
And then was that the soccer team that crashed?
I didn't look this up again. This could have been. They made a film about it. Only 3 years later, I was like, not enough time, guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know who directed that, but I don't think it was Werner.
Probably, probably not Werner.
Yeah, I think he was still pretty young.
She survived 11 days alone in the Amazon rainforest. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That's wild. Okay. Hit me with some more Werner Herzog facts.
He shot his first film with a camera that he stole from the Munich film school, which he did not attend. He didn't attend any film school, so he broke into the film school. It's not like he was like, I just took it from my class for a while. No,
yeah.
He legit stole it.
That's amazing.
He grew up in a remote mountain village in the Alps, and he didn't know about films till the age of 11. And he thought they were completely real, and he was freaking out. He had no telephones in this village. It was isolated. He saved Joaquin Phoenix's life.
Like Joaquin, you do.
He was involved in this really terrible car crash. He was alone. He was on a windy road, and his car flipped.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembers waking up and someone bashing in his window and being like, he told him he's okay, and Werner's there, and he's like, no, you're not. He pulls him out of the car, calls the ambulance, and vanishes. Though I was like,
did he know it was Werner Herzog at the time?
Yeah.
He was like, are you noted filmmaker Werner Herzog? Are you noted German filmmaker?
Yeah. He's very famous for his documentaries, which is why this like references him and like, oh, this very famous documentary. I couldn't recognize any until I was reading this fact about him, because I was like, this one I've seen. You know the famous documentary, Grizzly Man?
Yeah.
He did that one. And while he was doing an interview with that one, he was hit by a stray bullet from a sniper.
What?
They were doing the interview outside. He said it was fine. He insisted on going completing the interview. They just went inside. And he's to the flesh wound.
What is Werner Herzog? Not who. What is he?
I don't. And he's the only film director to have ever made a film on every continent.
Dang.
Right?
That is wild. Who is this? What is this man?
I just kept reading and I was like, oh my God. Why has there not been a film about this dude yet?
Right? He seems like really epic. Like, I just feel like the name Werner Herzog has been around forever. Like, I think it's like, it's up there with like Orson Welles.
Well, he was born in 1942, obviously. Like,
yeah.
Who would play him in the movie? I mean, I'm ready. It reminded me a lot when you talk about your journalist that you love. Hold on. Plimpton?
Yeah, George Plimpton.
He reminded me of like all these things that he's done, and he's like,
yeah. You're like, how is this woman like,
recognize him on the street unless you're Joaquin Phoenix under a car?
I know. Having just had like a traumatic experience, you're like, oh, it's Werner Herzog. I think later in the hospital I'd be like, I must have dreamt what? That was Werner.
Like, was it him? Was it him?
Like, I imagine they've met, like, they run in similar circles in the film world, but
I mean, probably. I mean, he has been in so many, like, directed and filmed so many things, and I feel like they've probably bumped into each other's. He's been up for an Oscar a couple times. They probably met at the Oscars. Do you think he brought it up at the Oscars after, like, hey, you remember that time you saved me out of a car?
And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm mysterious. I am German.
Yeah.
My heist light is not a heist so much as it is the culmination of a treasure hunt that I remember hearing about when it started 10 years ago, and it's been resolved. So the article, there was one in the Times, but I don't have a subscription to that. So this is on boston.com.
Call back to the episode, Boston.
Exactly, Boston. Someone found the buried treasure that an art dealer hid in the Rocky Mountains. Did you hear about this?
No.
Yeah. So I'll just read a little bit of the article. So after 10 years, a chase for hidden treasure in the Rocky Mountains has come to an end. Forrest Fenn, a New Mexico art collector who created the treasure hunt, announced over the weekend that someone had found the bronze chest that he had buried in the mountains, filled with gold nuggets, coins, sapphires, diamonds, pre-Columbian artifacts, and other items. He has estimated the hoard is worth $2 million.
Like chest box or chest torso?
Chest, like a treasure chest. So it was, and like the chest is like this bronze chest that weighed 20 pounds and like all the stuff in it was like 22 pounds, but, he buried it somewhere in the mountains and he wrote a memoir, and in the memoir, which is called The Thrill of the Chase, he provided clues for the location in 24 cryptic verses of a poem. And he said that the treasure was hidden in the Rockies at 5,000 feet above sea levels, and which all of these hints led, you know, these treasure hunters into really dangerous and remote areas of the wilderness there. And like people died trying to find this treasure. But finally, so at least two people have died trying to follow those clues. And some have accused him of endangering people's lives by offering up a quixotic adventure or even a hoax. So they weren't even 100% sure that he did bury this. And this was like back in 2010 that he did. But now somebody has claimed to have found it, and he sent photos of it and the location to Fenn. And so he's like, yep, that's my treasure. That's exactly where I buried it. But the guy is like, I would like to remain anonymous with my $2 million treasure chest.
Yeah.
Here. But
no, it's gonna look kind of obvious when he tries to go into the bank with it. I like to right. Deposit this.
Good chunk, 42-pound thing. In 2017, Chief Pete Cassettis of New Mexico State Police urged Fenn to stop the hunt, saying that people were putting their lives on the line. He says people are coming from other states and other parts of the world to find this elusive treasure that may or may not exist, with very few clues. And he says they're underestimating New Mexico. So in 2013, a Texas woman looking for the chest in New Mexico got lost near Bandelier National Monument, an expanse of 33,000 acres filled with canyons, steep trails, and rugged woods. After spending a frigid night between two boulders, she was rescued the next day.
We're here, yeah?
Yeah, so there, you know, people have been searching for this thing for a decade, and finally it was found. So I just think that's fascinating to like just have so much money that you're like, you know what? I'm just gonna be like that weird elusive millionaire who hides things and like sends people. It's like the beginning of a middle grade novel, you know?
Do you think the real identity of Fenn is like DB Cooper?
What if it is? That'd be really cool. Please write that story for me. Thank you.
I'm gonna be working on the
Oh, yeah, you're going to work on the Aldous Hodge, Dulé Hill.
Yes. Adventure. Buddy comedy, but it'll be good. Yeah. As well as my picture work before.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Jen, thank you so much for being on.
Great.
I know you're not on social media a bunch, but is there anywhere you want people to follow you or anything you want them to go do?
Do you want to see adorable pictures of my dog? You can go to, I'm on Night Nurse Jen on the Instagram.
Yes. You have a very cute dog named Winston.
My dog.
He likes to carry things in his mouth. Yes. He doesn't want you to have them. He just wants to show them to you. And you can follow me on Twitter at @librarianst. And
you can follow her. She's got more thoughts and ideas than I do. I just have dogs.
Yeah, so much stuff. I did just announce that my sister did test negative for COVID. So that was the very exciting thing that I tweeted today.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Robin had to go get tested yesterday or the day before yesterday. You know, she's 6 months pregnant. It's fine. It's fine.
What?
Yes. Okay, we'll talk about
this.
I know, but yes, so you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks. We'll be talking about the Girls Night Out job with Lisa. So thank you for listening, everybody.